It is 9:01 this morning, and you are listening to A Public Affair on KGNU, your community radio station. I am your host, Rosanna Longobetter, and today we are exploring a deeply human question. How do we hold grief in one hand and joy in the other hand, and especially in a moment of uncertainty, division, and attempts to erase the histories and life experiences of our communities? My guests are three artists. I'm gonna say artists because you guys are. And Black fathers raising children in mostly white spaces. We live in white spaces, and that's the reality. So it's an honor for me to have you in studios. I love doing shows live, so I don't know how this is gonna go, but we have a guitarist here, and that sounds amazing. So we're gonna have a little musiquita. That sounds fantastic. So I have Salasi, thank you, Salasi Atiase.
That's right.
Salasi Atiase. He is a Ghanaian world music and reggae artist. His award-winning songs approach complex and profound subjects with grace, simplicity, and also melodies that are memorable. Thank you. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Is the mic good?
It's good. Okay. Thanks for having us.
Perfect. We also have Pedro.
Senorinha.
Senorinha Silva. He's a storyteller, writer, comedian, and cultural critic. Through his liberation comedy project, Pedro uses humor to confront fear, challenge contradictions, and help people connect with their humanity. And we also have, and I'm so happy you made it, Ramon Gabrielov Parrish. He's a poet, also a storyteller, and educator who chairs interdisciplinary studies at Naropa University. His work brings together Afrofuturism, ritual, environmental justice, ancestral wisdom, and collective liberation. So you all together are going to present this event. You're presenting good grief, pain, pleasure, and possibilities. It's going to be an evening of poetry, storytelling, music, and comedy at the Boulder Public Library. And I would love if I can start already with Salasi.
Salasi.
Oh my God, I'm going to have to write it down. Salasi. That's the spelling in Spanish. You're pulling me off. Salasi. I just want to listen to your guitar this morning. I see you holding it, and it just wants some sound to inspire us this morning.
Okay.
Sweet. Thank you so much. Pedro, this gathering began with a very personal loss. Can you take us back to that moment, please?
Yeah, it was December 23rd of last year. I was sitting in my office at Unity Columbine Spiritual Center, where I serve as an associate minister right now. And I got a call, and it was like my soul was waiting for the call in advance. And I couldn't really reconcile it, but it was a call from my cousin letting me know that my little brother had been killed. And part of me is still sitting in that chair. It's still December 23rd, and I'm still not wanting to believe it. There's still a part of me that's in that space. And then what intensifies it is that I had a sense that something like that was going to happen, and I tried to protect him and prevent it from happening, and in some way warned him and said, hey, you know, you need to stay away from this person, I don't feel right about them, and told him and everything. But it still played out the way that it played out, and that kind of broke some ideas in my mind about life and how we navigate grief and a lot of other things. So this was born out of that, because the grief was, I felt like I was almost like drowning in the ocean of it, because it just kept hitting me from like so many directions. And then I know that we have this power to alchemize anything that comes to our way. So I was like, how can I alchemize this grief? And I thought, like, if I could turn it into something creative, And I was angry about the funeral, the way the funeral went as well. So I wanted to channel that anger into something creative and positive that could invite more people to witness how grief, you know, resides with us all the time. And how it gets triggered, and but to also know that through the power of creativity and relationship, like I have with these guys, that we can make something beautiful. So that's kind of how I got born.
So sorry for your loss.
Yeah.
And yeah, the power of community and transformation.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Sa Lassie, you grew up in Guyana, and your music carries reggae and world music, African influences, and the experiences you have gathered throughout your life. Sometimes music can say what ordinary conversation cannot. What can music carry for us when words alone are not enough?
Thank you. So I guess this kind of takes me back to why I decided to be a musician in the first place. So my parents were pretty religious. We need to go to church Sundays. And one Sunday, I was just walking along somewhere in the church corridor or in the courtyard somewhere. There was a guy sitting and playing a guitar. And I didn't even see the guy, but I was hearing the sound. And the sound just drew me. It just stirred up something inside me and drew me to him. So when I got there, I saw, oh, he's playing an instrument. And the emotions I felt, I was like, I want to learn how to make people feel that, you know. And that's the power of music. When it wasn't words, it was the sound and the power of the music that drew me. So I wanted to learn how to make people feel that. And that's kind of how I became a musician. And so, like you're saying, when words cannot speak, music can do more than that. And so that's my experience with music and why I'm doing what I do.
How do you make room for joy without using it to cover or denying pain? You know, this morning in our shows, we were talking about how to deal with this pain that we have, looking at the world, what's happening right now. How do that influence of artists such as Bob Marley, Nat King Cole, live inside you? Because I read about you, and that's what also these heroes are in your life.
Yeah, the people get influenced by the sound of music, and people are drawn to artists that generate that feeling. That's how people decide who my favorite artist is, to the sound and the power of the music. And so for me, it's like the artists you mentioned, it could be the lyrics and the melodies together. There's something in that blend that makes you, draws you to a particular artist or music. And so, yeah, it's just the combination of the effect and the impact of the music, you know. And so everybody's an individual. It will hit you differently than you hit me, you know. So in my path, like you mentioned, those two artists played a role in developing my interests. And then it also depends on the kind of music you listen to, you know. Because there's positive music, there's negative music too. And so you have to where you want the music to take you. And so it's individual choices, you know.
Yeah. And that's a reason I really wanted to be present here today with you guys. And that's a reason I asked you to play a little jingle. But I'm going to ask you for a song. So get ready, okay? But now I'm moving to Ramon Gabriel of Parrish. Ramon, black men are often expected to appear strong, control and resilient, even while carrying grief, discrimination, fear, and responsibility of protecting their children. What changes when black fathers' permission to be vulnerable, to grieve openly, and to experience joy without apology?
Wow, it's no small question.
These are the hard ones today.
You know, I think when we don't grieve and we do grieve, whether we show each other or not, we grieve. And when we don't show each other that we're grieving, like, we're kind of lying to each other in a way. You know, we're acting like we have everything together when we're falling apart inside. And chances are, if one person is grieving, if one person's feeling something, chances are hordes of people are feeling it. You know, I'm speaking more on a collective level. And of course, you have on your very personal family levels, you know, the grief, the sadness, the sorrow you feel in your relationships. Like, I feel like if we can show that to each other, then we kind of give each other permission to actually feel it and to go through it rather than masking it from each other. And, you know, I think there's an interesting relationship that this society, like, puts on Black men in terms of grief and feeling. Because on the one hand, it's like, don't show it. And on the other hand, this society relies on Black people in general to show, to be vulnerable, honestly. Yeah, I don't know. That's the start of a response to that question.
It's powerful. Although this event grows from your experiences as Black fathers, the invitation is broader. Who do you hope will come, and what do you hope they carry with them when they leave the theater? And I want to start again with Ramon and then move to you, Pedro and Salisi. And I'm going to go close up. I'm going to have to write it down. No Salasi. And I'm going to go close the door because I hear, yes, please do. Thank you. This is live radio for you guys.
Live radio.
The beauty. I love it, you know. Yeah, so again, we are here in studios. It's 9:14 this morning at KGNU. And I have three artists with me. Two people that I have already known, and one, Salasi Atiase, who I'm just meeting now. But we have Ramon Gabrielos Parish, who has been here in studios before with me, and also Pedro Silva. And we're talking an event that is coming on August 20th at the Boulder Public Library. And it is about grieving, but it's also about joy. And I'm asking my guest this morning, who do they hope will come, and what do they hope they carry with them when they leave the theater?
Well, I hope other Black fathers come. I hope Black mothers come. I hope young fathers come. I hope older fathers come. I hope Latino, Latinx fathers and mothers come. And I hope everybody comes. You know, it's open to everybody. It's open to everybody in the Boulder and beyond community. And I hope people come wanting to, being open to being in a communal experience of grieving and joyfulness.
Yeah. Yeah, same. Somebody asked me, well, is this about Black grief? And I was like, it's about humans. You know, I think part of the problem sometimes is that we think that other people are not human. You know, even the way that we look at how we grieve, we're all experiencing similar encounters in life of birth and loss and death and sickness, like how it talks about in Buddhism, and all these things all are part of the human experience. And we're all encountering our humanity together, except for we often silo ourselves and try to protect what we consider. I mean, there's times and places for all of those things when you're in a vulnerable situation, but at the same time, a lot of times we try to make other people more vulnerable because we're not facing our own vulnerabilities. So there's people who are afraid, like Malcolm X said that the worst thing that white people ever did to Black people was to teach us to hate ourselves. And the question that I thought about that was like, well, who could teach someone to hate themselves except for someone who already hates themselves as well? You know, it's something that's inside of us that tells us something's lacking and something's missing. And when we look at the idea both of that we hold grief in one hand and joy in the other, and that we have the power to alchemize grief, then it's like an invitation to all human beings to realize our vulnerabilities and our power to transmute those vulnerabilities. So it's totally for everybody. And last thing I'll say before I pass it on to Selassie is that the degree to which we open ourselves up to joy is the degree to which we'll open ourselves up to grief in this world. And so if you try to avoid grieving, you're going to avoid joy. And those things are just inextricably woven together, just like all of us as humans are inextricably woven together. Mm. So it's for everybody to bear witness to that and connect with our power.
Thank you, Pedro.
Yeah, like we just said earlier, that everybody has some degree of grief that they're dealing with, but a lot of us live in denial too. You know, we don't want to deal with it. So my hope is that it will attract people who are dealing with that, and they may also get some sort of guidance or healing or how to deal with whatever they are dealing with. You know, that's my hope, that, you know, one of the benefits of people who attend, you know, if maybe it's not even you, but you might know somebody who's dealing with something, and when you come to that, you may be able to help somebody out too from what you just experienced at this event. So, and that's...
And you're going to have all sorts of things, you know, poetry, comedy, and song. So I would really love, Selassie, if you can share a short song or part of a song that speaks to the spirit of this good grief event.
Yes, I had three songs in mind that I wanted to, I'll be performing at the event, and one of them I'll do today. It's called Pray For Me, and this song was inspired by one of my high school mates who, in the early 90s, he was sent to, there was a civil war in Liberia and Sierra Leone, West Africa, and he joined the army, and he was deployed on the peacekeeping mission with a peacekeeping force called the ECOMOG back then. ECOMOG stands for something, I can't really remember what it stands for, but it was a peacekeeping force supposed to go in these war zones and try to help establish peace. And unfortunately, he experienced some horrible things. So when he came back, I sat with him at the ocean, the beach where we often met, just talking, and he was just not the same person, you know. And we had a conversation, and some of the words that he said to me stuck with me. So then it inspired me to write the song. And unfortunately, he passed away probably a month after that conversation, and that really, you know, it had an impact on me because I knew what he was going through, and the things that he said to me. So some of the words, what I remember, I use it, and I also wrote more words to it. So this song is called Pray For Me. So pray for me, I really need you just to stand by me. Will you just to pray for me, oh, stand by me, stand by me. It's dark outside, I can see my worries in your eyes. Where I left them for safekeeping, you see through my disguise. So I am saying now, please stand by me, stand by me. Oh, pray for me, pray for me. Stand by me, stand by me. So pray for me. It's just a short version of the song.
Awesome.
Thank
beautiful.
You.
So beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. So beautiful. Well, it's music. I always say music is the language of gods, huh? So it's another level. It's another level, and I love it. We're so blessed that we have that, you know, that language to bring us all together. It's a unifier for sure. I will also would like to, you know, go back to what Ramon was saying this morning, because I would like, you know, to bring us to the moment that we're living right now. Ramon, we have a situation in the world that is so messy. And, you know, it feels really raw to have children right now. And I just don't have words to express, you know, how worried I am, how sad I am, and sometimes how I feel I don't have anything to do. You know, it's almost like, yeah, no hope. So if you can speak about, you know, how this event and the things that you do with young people, you know, your work at Naropa, and the reason why you're offering this before school starts, you know, school will start soon, and then we'll all get into the busy, busy schedule. And this is a moment of reflection. So if you can speak about that, thank you.
Well, I think part of the timing, I mean, you know, Pedro, I would throw this over to you in part. I mean, I think part of the timing is maybe partly good fortune, or maybe the combination is good fortune. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, let's look at what's happening in various parts of the world. Gaza, you know, Sudan, Congo, Argentina. I mean, all over the United States, like, you know, atrocities, massive, like, calamities, like, massive forgetfulness, willful forgetfulness. I feel like, particularly in the United States, not even willful forgetfulness, but attempts at erasure. You know, there's a huge effort right now to erase our history as Black people, and really our history as Americans, because the experiences of Black people in the United States and this part of the world are the experiences of everybody, in a sense, just in the sense that we're all human beings, and, you know, our experiences are interwoven, and the experience of Black people in this country has made, in many ways, this country what it is. And the attempts to erase and remove and destroy that will, I think, destroy the nation straight out. Like, it'll pull it apart at the roots, and it'll force us into a historical amnesia, and then we'll be repeating history again, you know, and the ugliest parts of our history. And there's a lot of people that want that, and I think they want it in part because we actually haven't really gone through the grief processes that we need to assimilate what happened and to move forward intelligently from it.
Right.
Seriously, like, we haven't. Yeah. You know, so I feel like this offering is part of it's a little grief ritual. It's part of a place for us to share particular experiences and stories around grief and joy, but it's also an opening for community to come together and to pour our grief out together in a small way.
Yeah. And I think particularly speaking of going back to men, is this thing that men in our system have, whether they've taken on the role or whether they've just been subjected to the role, that they typically find their identity in being a provider, a protector, sometimes a punching bag is what I use, and sometimes a performer. And these kind of roles that we play distance us from the core essence of who we are, and the vulnerability, the intimacy, all those things. Because just from an evolutionary standpoint, if you look at, you know, imagine there's a family, a man, a woman, and a child. The woman's pregnant, so she's extremely vulnerable. So the man has to armor up to make sure that he's keeping her safe in that historical context. Hmm. And then the baby's born. The baby, human babies, are vulnerable longer than any other species. So then that lengthens the time that the role of protector has to be in place, where this person has to armor up because they have to protect, they feel like they have to protect these vulnerable people. Well, now the world has changed and times have changed, and men have not caught up at, or had the space to connect with that they were a baby once, they were a vulnerable person once, they were, and they still are, that person still inside of them. And the childhood, which is able to transmute things into joy, like, you can watch a child, they'll be crying 1 second and laughing the other, because they're present with life as it's unfolding. And a lot of men in our systems have been so armored up that they are, I don't want to say holding back evolution, because it's not I don't think it's always a conscious thing, they just are stuck in that role. And particularly a lot of white men are even stuck in that role where they don't have an identity apart of from trying to be some mythological person that never they can they protect their ability to kill correlates to their ability to protect in their mind unconsciously. And so the more people I can kill, the more I can they tie it together. And so when we don't kind of hang out in that reality and bear witness to the trauma that is kept perpetuating through our society and falling on the backs and bodies of so many other people, it puts us in a situation where eventually people are going to think the only way I can stop this is to do what was done to me. And this opportunity is to say that we have this power. If we face it collectively, consciously, and we use this alchemical power to be able to transmute it. Because the whole thing with comedy is tragedy plus time. That's the formula. Or disaster plus distance. And the disaster plus distance one is the dangerous one, because that means I can laugh at something outside of myself and distance myself from it, which is what we mess around with. But if we come into the conscious one of tragedy plus time and allow time to do what it does and to be present with it and allow it to alchemize, then it becomes like a recipe for flourishing.
Wow. Pedro Silva, my guests have been artists and black fathers. Lassie,
it's a powerful name.
Anyway, good. Joke with me. Salasi Atiasi.
That's right.
Yes. Ramon Gabrielov Parish and Pedro Silva. Their free performance, Good Grief, Pain, Pleasure, and Possibilities, takes place Thursday, August 20th from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Canyon Theater inside the Boulder Public Library at 1000 Canyon Boulevard. And that's where you can listen more. You can connect with these wonderful people. I would love it if you can take us out again with a little bit of that beautiful sound of your guitar. Salasi.
That's right.
Woohoo! I did it. Yeah, because through poetry, storytelling, music, and comedy, the event is going to be inviting the community to explore human capacity to hold grief and joy in a creative tension. Thank you again, Salasi, Ramon, and Pedro. Thank you for speaking from the heart this morning. I have been your host, Rosanna Longobetter, and this has been a public affair here on KGNU, your community radio station.